Curiosity. What are you so curious about? Everything. Mr. Curiosity.
All right, folks, this is Joe Snedeker, and this is my Mr. Curiosity podcast. And oh my goodness, is this weird stuff what's happening? All right, now, you listen, I'm here with Tom Welby, big shot state representative of the 113th, and Angela. Angela, what's your title?
I'm the district office director.
I don't even know what that means. All right, and now here's the deal. We tried this podcast a couple days ago, and Mr. Welby's equipment failed, right? Tom, what happened there?
I hate when you say it that way.
Your technical equipment failed.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some issues, and we're having some issues again this morning.
We're having some issues now. So we're like on a cell phone, another office computer, and I'm here in my Zoom room. But here's the deal. Because the first part of our interview, which we did last week, failed, or 2 days ago, I'm going to summarize. I think I got all this. You were born in 1949. You're one of 12, if not 13 kids.
13.
You were brought up Irish Catholic. Your parents practiced the Irish rhythm method and had multiple children, and you're one of them. And then you were a quiet kid in high school. You were born and raised in Scranton. You went to a Catholic school, but then you moved to a public school for graduation, correct?
For ninth grade.
Okay. I think that's where we left off.
Come on, bye-bye.
Goodbye. No, what'd you do after? So, all right. So, Ange, are we boring you already or no? You're okay with
No, I'm interested to learn about State Representative Tom Welby's history.
Did you know all this that we said?
I did.
I still don't know if there's 12 or 13 kids. How many?
13. There were 13 of us.
13, and that's a huge family. So now you're in your late high school years, and you're thinking about a career. What happens then?
I don't remember.
Ange, is he always like this?
Always.
Sorry, come on, Tom. You're the big shot, 113th Lackawanna County State Representative. This is it, man. This is it. This is your new avenue for success.
It is, but before we get there, can we go back to the DJ days? I want to hear a little bit about
that. Yeah, we're going to get to that's what I want to hear. Okay. I want to hear about DJ, Rock 107, college. Where'd you go to college, big guy?
Oh, I did not. While I was still in high school, I got involved in the arts and in theater and just activities, a lot of activities in high school from the ski club. And I didn't ski, but I like going up to the mountain and sitting in the lodge. Actually, I sprained my ankle taking lessons the very first week. and then we started a spirit club, just got really, really involved with different programs within the high school. I with someone else, co-wrote an underground newspaper that almost got me expelled, and just fun in high school. And that went from my first year in high school, ninth grade, going from St. Anne's and then into Westside, where it was like 24, 27 kids in the class to like 400 in the class. My first year, I didn't talk to anybody almost. It was just, I was just really intimidated, really almost afraid to talk to people. But I got involved with the theater group, got involved. It helped me out socially. It just really opened me up almost too much. While I was there, I got involved in some community theater as well while I was in high school. And I got involved with the theater groups, and that's what I wanted to do.
And after all, this was the late 60s, so it's peace, love, and happiness, right?
Yeah. Love eternal grooviness.
So you were grooving. But what do you do for money? Are you still living at home when you get out of high school?
I graduated on Friday night, and literally Saturday morning, I prearranged it. But I went from graduating on Friday night to Saturday morning joining a summer stock theater group, a semi-professional theater group in the Poconos. And that's what I did. I thought that I would become an actor and be famous and be in all of the movies that you like to watch. In that theater group up in the Poconos, we, as any nonprofit or rather semi-profit theater group would do, you work morning till night, you work on sets, you work on audio, you work on lighting, and then also you're in the play and rehearsing all day. And I went through the entire summer working. It was crazy working from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m, but enjoying it, having a ball, meeting all these people from New York and Chicago that were in the group. And as it ended at the end of the season, I figured it out. I netted out to about $7 a day. It was $7 a week was my net pay. And I kind of thought to myself, well, I better find something other than this. And I just took odd jobs and eventually went to work in the post office in Morristown, New Jersey for a year.
Yeah, but wait right there. Stop now. So, Ange, I think a lot of folks would say now, the cynics would say, oh, yeah, another politician, actor, you know, of pretending he's something he's not. It all goes together, doesn't it? Not that that's you, because you are a kind, sincere, loving, great guy. I know that. But I'm just saying the cynics might say that.
Well, I just loved the theater. It was terrific.
Did you open up? Were you a different person then? Were you starting to meet women? I don't know what you were trying to do back then in 69, 70.
Yeah, that was part of it. And when I went into the theater group in the Poconos, it was a little bit different in that I was really excited by these actors from New York and Chicago. But you know, I got used to it and got involved and worked hard and enjoyed the heck out of it, trying out for and being in different places up there. But it just didn't work out financially.
So you were living at home at the time, commuting?
Oh, no. I lived up there.
So you're 19 years old. You leave home and you're just doing theater stuff?
Absolutely, yeah.
Were you living in someone's basement? How do you do that?
Well, yeah, we literally the theater company had two houses that we lived in, but yeah, it was a in residence theater, and you know, a lot of people have done it. I have a cousin Donna who did it professionally and still is doing it in New York.
Ange, we were still in diapers. We don't understand this way of life he was doing, right? I mean, the crazy late 60s, early 70s. How do you just leave home, live in a theater group? What the heck?
Well, I think we all do it one way or the other. A way to school. I mean, it's you're on your own. You're doing whatever stuff with new people. I did it with theater, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I started to work at the post office in Morristown, New Jersey. My whole family has been involved in the post office previously. My dad was a supervisor in Scranton. My uncle Bob was a supervisor in Scranton. My uncle Tom was the postmaster in Taylor Old Forge. I have an uncle who was a postmaster in New Jersey. And I just thought I'd give it a shot.
To me, this sounds like a great career path. Okay, so now I'm going to get this steady government job. I'm going to make good money, get good benefits, get married, have kids, and there it is. It's over.
There you go. But yeah, he passed away in 1969. I thought I'd give it a shot, give it a whirl. And maybe the Welby jeans were meant to be in the post office. I decided to get out of it. I was told that in order to take the supervisors or inspectors test, you had to be there 3 or 5 years, respectively. And I thought, I know more than these people after a year, which was a little vain of me. Yeah. But I got out of that and went to a radio broadcasting school, a career broadcasting school in Manhattan that Joey Shaver from WARM turned me on to.
Your microphone seems to be cutting in and out. You may have to go join Angela. You guys might have to do this as a duo. I don't know.
I could.
Do you hear him cutting out a lot?
He could. I'm not a fan of sharing the microphone. I could definitely.
All right. So I don't see you.
I could pass the chair to the state rep.
No, I like this here. So, Tom, if you could still hear us, what are you doing at the post office? You licking stamps? Are you?
I was a hack carrier. Clerk carrier.
Here, just go
sit. They're still working this out in the big. And the big state rep office. Here we go. See, it's all about the arrival. There you go. All right. See.
Whoa!
Shut that phone off.
Yeah, she's.
That's why he needs an assistant. All right, she's gone.
Yep.
Oh, now it sounds so much better. So, when you were at the post office, were you thinking, I want to do this the rest of my life, or I hate this?
I didn't know. I was 19, 20 years old and just exploring things and having fun and not making any kind of commitment to anything and just checking things out. Hooked up with Joey Schaefer at WARM. I always enjoyed radio as well. And he hooked me up with this Manhattan, it's called Career Academy of Famous Broadcasters.
Oh, God, that sounds like something in the back of a comic book scam.
Just about. But yeah, it had the instructors like Dan Ingram and different people from Manhattan Radio. They had a school in Washington, D.C., where originally I was going to go to with my friend Glenn Kalina. Glenn wound up going at the same time to the Washington, D.C. school. I was in Manhattan. And it was right across from the library, 8 West 40th Street in Manhattan. And it was a really good experience.
So this to me goes with the thespian thing where acting, that didn't work out. Post office doesn't work out. Oh, I'll try to do, in a way, improvised audio material. Is this what you're leaning towards now?
It was just to be a DJ and also they trained you also with news gathering, sports reporting. It was a really compressed learning process that tried to cover as many bases as possible. And they had great instructors, particularly in Manhattan. I'm sure in the other schools they did as well. But in Manhattan, they had a lot of people from the radio market in New York as guest instructors in there, and the regular instructors were good.
So it's like a shortcut. Yeah, it's like a shortcut instead of going to a college and getting a broadcast journalism degree. This is kind of a quick exit into the world.
Yeah, this focused on broadcasting. You didn't have to take your 82 other subjects that weren't relative to the industry. That always kind of bothered me with college
How much was this class, this school?
I don't really remember. I had some help paying for it from a guy that I used to work for part-time at that time.
But fairly costly, probably, right?
Costly, but less certainly than a university semester. But it was good. It was good. And it's funny, it was something that I wanted to just focus on that. And so to speak, have the subjects relative to just what I wanted to focus on, not 82 other subjects that aren't going to mean anything. I mean, how many of us, we look back at our careers, or rather our time in school, if you went to higher education, how many are working in the field that they majored in?
I am.
Well, yeah, you're definitely one of the few. At the time that I was going to school, a lot of the kids in my class at that time, their major was in education, phys ed, or philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the time. That's what it was. And you know, different times, there's other things. But how many people got that job in philosophy?
Right. But with all due respect, that broadens the mind. Even though it doesn't become a career, it broadens that person. It makes them deep.
Absolutely. As does living in Manhattan.
Girth. Yes, as does living in Manhattan. That should be a 12 credit internship. So now
I graduated from that and did well. I worked really, really hard. I took it very seriously and worked really hard on it. It was a lot of studio time, practice time, where you literally would do a repeat reading, recording it, playing it back, critiquing yourself, having others critique you. But I took it seriously. I really did for those 6 months.
So
I graduated valedictorian and I thought it was a hot shot.
No joke.
I'm sorry?
No joke?
Oh, no, seriously. Yeah. Yeah. The other kid in the class just didn't do as well, but it was good. I did do that. And I thought that I was hot stuff. And I came back and it was 2 years before I got a job in the industry, almost 2 years, a little less than 2 years.
Oh, man. Well, that means, but I guess what the universe was telling you back there, since you felt so good and cocky about it, is you found your groove where you're meant to go in life.
Yeah. And then there was nowhere to get the job.
Right.
I started working at a little radio station in Pittston, WPTS, which later became WARD. And it was a terrific experience. And anybody that has worked early on in radio back then, you did everything. I mean, literally, you were the news reporter and also research person early in the morning when I got in at whatever, 5 or 6 o'clock. You're calling all of the police departments and state police barracks, asking if anything happened overnight. And you found ways to get news stories. You wrote them. And then there's a pretty good chance that at from 9 until 3 or 10 until 3, you were the midday jock. And then after you got off the air, you recorded commercials. You did everything. And it was a terrific learning experience working in a small radio station. I went from WPTS in 1975. I moved over to WEJL, and they had an FM station at the time, WEZX, which was a dentist office, elevator music kind of radio station. WEJL,
The birth of rock and roll and your new life. And here comes me entering the world 12, 13 years old. And this is Rock 107's beginning. And you're one of the first guys there.
Yeah. We I think it was December of 76, we started to work on changing the format. There was no rock radio station in the market other than WBAX, AM radio stations, and WILK. WSCR was doing some stuff.
Now, please back up for a second. So there really was no even FM in the early 70s, correct? Like it was there.
That's right. Yeah, there was the syndicated FM stations. EZX had it originally. It was called Hit Parade, and it went to WGBI. It was WGBI FM, and it was
nothing like today. Now FM rules the airwaves. Back then, it was AM.
Right.
So you're at the beginning of FM. New
yeah. Well, we at the time when the owner Bill Lynott and his program director, Joe Silva, are the ones that decided to take the leap and change the format from elevator music to rock and roll. And at the radio station, we didn't have any records. Even at WEJL, when I got there, they used to buy their records at Spruce Record Shop and in the record department at Globe Store. I took over as music director and got involved with the record labels, became we call it a reporter for a trade magazines, the Gavin Report, and then Radio and Records.
Right.
And the record companies started sending me the records, but we had no library to fall back on. They would send us the new stuff, and eventually I got them to send us the libraries of all the different bands and single artists. But we wanted to change to rock radio, and we didn't have the records.
That's amazing. So I'm trying. Can I just ask you this then? Because now, what are we talking? 74, 75, 76, or late
70s? No, 75 was still the beautiful music format on the FM, and I was on EJL. And late 76 is when the change started to happen.
But what does this say about our area? And I wonder how indicative it was of the Northeast or the nation. You have rock, in some respects, peaking with everything from Van Halen to Aerosmith to the Beatles breaking up and becoming their own solo artist. Rock is the new entity, and there's no representation around here.
Well, there is. It was just on AM. The radio stations, WILK. I'm sorry.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, it was the radio stations on the AM side were pumping it up and cranking it out, and WVAX at night had a lot of album cuts that they used to play, really obscure stuff, some really heavy stuff. And WILK was a good rocker, SCR was good, but there was nothing on the FM band, in this market anyway. So we had a sister station in Orlando, WDIZ, and they got the Kent Stevens, I believe his name was the program director, and he had the records down there. They were rock radio in Orlando. He used to literally make tapes for us, send them up, and they were on tones, and it was one set of reels, these large tapes. We had an automation system, and we programmed it based on his reels that he used to send up to us from Florida, until we were able to finally establish a library of music up here that we could play our own. Up until that, we couldn't. So we were taped up until the beginning of around 1980, and originally we were FM 107.
Yes.
And we had some contests going on to establish a logo. And while we were FM 107, before we went live, before they went live, I was gone when they went live.
And but
one cool contest that we had was we had a promotion where we asked people to come up with a new logo for us for FM 107. We had two grand prizes. One was for the most creative and one was for the largest. And we had people painting the FM 107 logo or call letters on the side of houses, along the rocks on 81, carving it out in the field. It was terrific. We did get a cease and desist from PennDOT because people were literally painting it on rock ledges or bridges or whatever along 81. But it was fun.
Looking for a logo.
When we came up with this cool little FM 107 logo that had like a sunrise coming out of it. And it was pretty neat. And then eventually, after we established a library and got the jocks in line, and I was leading at that time, they went live in 1980. And as they went live, they changed the call the phrase to Rock 107.
Oh, I love it.
Also, we referred to it then as your 24-hour rock concert. But it was a lot of fun there. It was pretty cool. It was neat.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, because this is similar now, and I know it was a TV show, but something like WKRP in Cincinnati, I was 13, 14 years old when you're doing all this and when FM is coming of age, and you can argue that then radio was more pure. It was a DJ playing what that person was interested in, and it had its high and low points, but now it's driven by just corporate sterilization. And every station is the same, and the character has been vacuumed out. You were at the beginning of what was a character, and I'd say peak of FM rock radio, correct?
Well, we certainly then, and it continued for a good number of years after that,
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
But when we did first bring it out, it was pretty weird in that.
But weird is good.
Well, yeah, it was, and we took it was just after Christmas, I believe. We Billy Lynott and Joe Silva. Really had the chutzpah to do this. They went from a dentist office, beautiful music format, and took it off the air, dropped the signal, turned it off for 2 days. And we thought we'd make it easier than just all of a sudden coming on with whatever music we had. But when we went rock, those first months, people were calling and writing letters to the editors. They were calling us devil worshipers and Satan. But Billy Lynott and Joe took the brunt of it. I mean, they had a lot of business people coming down on them and community leaders saying, you know, what are you doing?
Well, that was a risk, and they were on the cutting edge of a new wave of music.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't think about it that much, but I look back on it now and they got a lot of abuse for changing that and going rock. And we used to play back then. We used to play a lot of obscure stuff.
It was
terrific. Yeah.
But were you one of those fun DJs who would play maybe a B cut from Pink Floyd, or you would play some?
Oh, absolutely.
Song by Boy Circle. Were you that guy?
Eventually we started making our own tapes and making the tapes. We used to do a lot of obscure album cuts. And it was a lot of fun. Also, one night for a Saturday night, I aired a little program that I spliced together. I put together. We called it Saturday Night Taped. And at that time, the Supreme Court was hearing the 7 words you can't say on radio or TV.
Okay.
That was being decided by the Supreme Court. And the FCC rule that I read said that while it's being considered by the Supreme Court, no action could be taken against a broadcast facility for doing that until it's declared by the Supreme Court as illegal. And right. And me, without asking permission, thought that that was true. And I put together a reel of an hour-long show using George Carlin's full set of 7 words you can't say, Cheech and Chong with the dogs under the porch, and all of these other comedy routines that were popular at the time.
I love it.
That literally did the routines using those 7 words, and I aired it on that Saturday night taped, and Billy Lynott called me. Bonehead Welby just assumed that it was okay. Called me kind of in a fit, not not happy with what I did. And I expressed to him that, you know, so long as the Supreme Court hasn't ruled on it yet, we're safe. We're okay. I think if he was in the same room with me, I think he would have killed me. But he did kind of say that, you know, I better be right. And I'll talk to you Monday. But it was yeah, we did do things that were on the edge and a lot of fun. And it is a different world. And you do have to be safe now.
Well, we don't want to get too bogged down in just one aspect of your life. But so this is in your 20s now. And where are you living? What are you doing? Are you married, kids? You're working full time at the radio station?
Yeah, I was working full time at the radio station. And I was had a four in between apartments. I lived at home. But yeah, I had an apartment that I was living in. I think at that time it might have been in Moosic, in the Greenwood section of Moosic. Another time I was over at the Taylor West Granton line.
And how old are you?
But yeah, it's just having my own place.
You're close to 30. Also during
that time I got married and had a son, my son Alden. Yeah.
So you're a steady radio guy. You have a wife, kid, and this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You're going to be a DJ, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And how long did that last? What's going on through the 80s and into the 90s?
The around 77 or so, dance music, disco got hot.
Wait, excuse me. I have to go throw up.
and that was kind of my feeling at the time, too, that I was rock radio. And there was a nightclub that wanted us to do some spinning, some live broadcast and spinning. And it was up at the Weldwood complex, part of the Weldwood complex. It was different clubs they had up there were the Gatsby, the Odyssey, later Hotline, Times Square Disco, and Joe Pizak was the owner of me at two different buildings. And so we went up as 107 and we spun, and it was like $75 cash that night. And there were two DJs. So we alternated on and off 45 minutes or an hour on, and then you'd go cruise the club for that period and come back. But whatever. And at first it was just something I did to make money. And then I started to enjoy it. And I worked the nightclubs quite a bit at that time with those clubs. And when the Oz opened up in 78, 79, on Lackawanna Avenue, it was a real hot place with a line to get in outside. It was very cool.
Our version of Studio 54.
Our version of Studio 54. It was, and it was a lot of fun. And in the August of 1980, this guy, Marvin Roth, who had a novelty business down in Wilkes-Barre, bought and opened the station complex in Wilkes-Barre.
Oh, baby, yep.
The fabulous place. We had two restaurants, two nightclubs, and eventually train cars as hotel rooms.
How were you fixed into this?
Well, they talked to me about being a DJ there with another guy, Mike Marzelli, and then Mike Calore and some other people who DJed. And also worked daytime as the promotion manager, the advertising and promotion manager. So that's what I did. I gave up radio and went down there and made cash at night spinning records in the nightclub.
And changing the diapers, working, you're a father.
Well, yeah, at one point, it was three jobs at one time at one point.
And this is into your 30s now?
Yeah, early 30s. At the one point, it was working at EJL 107 during the day. At night, going down to Prestige Pools across from the Woodlands, selling swimming pools from about 5 till 8. And then 9 o'clock, I was up at Pizak's place up in Einan DJing.
I love it.
But it was it's what you do. I mean, you had to pay the bills. So it's what you do.
So this all, you're spinning through, you got these side gigs, side hustles, as they say now. You're a family man, you're a father, you're a husband, you're working two, three jobs, you got a house. And what's happening now into the, you know, your midlife years, into your 30s and 40s now?
Yeah. And with it, I used to do a lot of commercials for people, writing and producing radio commercials. And it was a lot of fun. But KRZ came to me and said, please come over to us and join our advertising team, our advertising sales team. And I didn't want to get back into that, but they made an offer, and I left the station complex full time and went to work at KRZ in their advertising commercial sales department, and still DJed a little bit at night, a lot of nights.
Oh, this is interesting. Who owned them back then? Was this still local ownership?
Yeah, it was people that they actually came on the air around the same time the station opened up.
I thought so.
Of 1980. And the general manager was Jim Shea. The program director was Jim Rising. On air, they had Mark Sinclair, Jerry Padden.
Local legends. These guys are local. Oh, yeah. I have to get them on the podcast. Yeah.
Terrific people. And they were still there when I joined the sales department, and it was a lot of fun working there. Jay Daniels was there early on. So I stayed in broadcast, worked there for 2 years, selling commercials, going out writing and selling commercials. And then when Wolf TV came on, they were there in town for about a year or two, and they asked me to join them, and I did. And worked there for 15 years in the commercial sales department at Wolf TV.
Oh, so you leave radio, and this is your first venture into TV when Wolf begins. Fox, for the youngsters out there listening, this was a new entity in, I think, what, late 80s, early 90s?
They started around 87, 86.
Okay. Yeah,
I joined them in 87, yeah.
And this is when The Simpsons starts and Married with Children. And that was a big deal back then, a new network.
We had Tracy
Ullman show.
Yeah, the Tracy Ullman show started with that, and the Simpsons were a tiny little segment within the Tracy Ullman show.
And
Joan Rivers had a talk show at the time, and that was it.
So you're selling commercials on this new station, and this is you probably caught it at a good time. You're making good money.
It was okay. It got better when at the time Fox worked out a deal with WNEP to do the news, and they started the 10 o'clock news, the only 10 o'clock news in the market at the time, and then we got NFL football, those things, the growth of Fox Wolf TV at that time made it lucrative.
Folks, how this life is evolving and our lives are about to converge, because now you're bringing in WNEP. So Fox becomes the player of our 10 p.m. news.
Yep.
And then you start schmoozing with WNEP people, I guess. And then before you know it, you're a new sales guy at WNEP, correct?
That's right. Yeah. After 15 years at Wolf, Fox 56. And we had other things too. We had our WB station. We had our internet, nepatoday.com. And it was all fun. It was good to have different product that you're selling. But yeah, WNEP, I applied there and was accepted. And back then it was Lou Kirchen. Was the GM, Chuck Morgan was the sales manager, and they took maybe part of the team. It was terrific working there, and I stayed there for almost 10 years.
2002, 2003, 2004?
I joined around 2002, I think it was, around 2002, I believe it was, when I joined WNEP.
Folks, this is where Snedeker and Welby converge.
And it's kind of funny with sales department, you stay away from news and programming. Yeah. It's just like two different worlds and they can't collide. But having the radio and broadcasting and DJ background and also dabbling in news in the early years, I worked with and knew an awful lot of the people on the talent side of WNEP. And it wasn't unusual for me to go over to the newsroom, say hi to Carl Abraham or Jimmy Coles or all the different people that worked over there that at some time previously in my life, I was associated with. And initially, some of the other people was like, what's he doing over here? And in the sales department, it was kind of the same thing. It's like, why did you go over there?
That's funny.
But 16 was just, no kidding, was a fabulous place to work. It was such good people there, a lot of fun.
I remember when you first started, because again, you're what, 15, 16 years older than me. So I was kind of the new guy at WNEP full time. And here comes you, this sales guy. And he would always, like he said, come down to the news department, but you were cool. You were honest. You were fun. Not that other sales guys weren't. I don't mean it that way, but I mean, I immediately connected to you because you were the kind of guy, didn't take yourself too seriously, had a good time, could trust just what we call a bro, a dude, a good guy. So we hit it off, you and I. Remember I used to show you the Andrew Jackson on the phone?
Oh, yeah. I, I, wear my hair at different lengths at different times too. And yeah, you did. You took one of the pictures, copied it onto the $20 bill, I think it was.
Yeah, he looked just like Andrew Jackson. You look just like Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. I thought we'd pull that out.
And yeah, you were just as crazy back then in your early days as you are now. It hasn't changed an iota. It was fun. WNEP was a great place to work, and people see it from a distance and wonder. And they, you know, when I was out on the road calling on people and on businesses, it was easy for me to get in and get an appointment with a lot of the businesses. And one of the first things that they would say would be, "What's Joe really like?" or "Nolan, what's Nolan really like? Is he really a nice guy like that?" It was. For people that question it and wonder about it, 16, I've been out for 10 years, but 16 was a really great place to work. And I've been blessed also in a lot of the places that I've worked, including Fox 56, Wolf TV, and WNEP. The management at both of those places not only let me, but even encouraged me and others to get involved in the community and do public service work. And there's not a lot of employers that allow for that. They say, "No, that's on your own time. You can't be spending work time on that." But they literally encourage it, and I hope they still do. And I got involved with so many different public service groups, nonprofit groups, in helping them out and doing things. And more businesses should have that kind of philosophy that Wolf and WNEP does. It makes the community better. It makes their business better, too. It makes the perception of their business better. And Lou Kirchen at WNEP knew that and lived that. And then Chuck Morgan, following Lou, copied that same philosophy. It was, for those of you watching, listening, WNEP really, really was, and I assume still is, just a fabulous place to work and great people there.
But Wells, that's you are so right in your last few comments about the community service. And here's the thing that impressed me about Welby. Whenever there was an event that was a good for the community event, a nonprofit, whether it's my bike ride, whether it's the Susan G. Komen fundraiser, whether it's Feed a Friend, every event and a charitable outlet that happened in the area, you were either a part of or you would show up there. You wouldn't tell anybody. You would just show up. And I'm like, who is this guy? Who is this martyr? Who is the man? Because you have this subtlety about you, but you would always be a part of and want to be entwined with a good deed for the community. And I'm not just saying that. Like, this is the straight dope. You would inject yourself into anything good.
You and so many other people have that same philosophy, as do people watching and listening and so many people we know. But for me, it grows out a lot of it through growing up as one of 13 kids. and you know, we did not have a lot. We had a lot of support from the community that helped us. And I mean, I lived what a hand up can do and make someone feel. And I also lived when you were played down because of your position.
Yep.
And I just lost you, Joe. There we are.
I still got you. No, so yeah, you are a community guy. You're an honest guy. You're a cool guy. You're a help others kind of guy. And that's
lucky. I was lucky to have people helping me as I grew up. My dad died in 1969. And at the time, there were 11 of us at home at that time. My older brother, Jimmy, had joined the Navy and my sister, Amory, had just gotten married. So I was the oldest at home. And there's my mom with 11 kids, a single parent with 11 kids. If I had 11 of me, I think I'd drown half of this. But I was blessed in knowing what a difference it does make to someone and to a family when if you can help them and help them quietly too. You don't do it to be seen as helping someone.
That's
the right thing to do.
Yeah. So that, I can't believe it's been 10 years since you left NEP. Is that true?
Yeah. And when I left WNEP, it was kind of weird. I used to look at the obituary papers to be aware of. When I did look at them, excuse me, not that I looked at them, but when I did look at them, it was to be aware of the friends of mine when their parents passed. Well, I want to be aware of it and do that. And as I was doing that, It went from seeing parents to seeing people my age and then seeing people younger than me. And I was like, what, about 62 at the time? And I thought, I'm going to retire. I'm going to go out and get my public service work in before that bus that's out there looking for me runs me down. And that's why, that's literally why I retired from WNEP to do public service work and just get that in.
And, I was wondering that. So when you left WNEP and you were only 62 years old or something, correct?
Yeah, and I was making some pretty good money there, even though we had gone through a pretty serious recession as far as commercial sales goes.
Right.
It was good money, but yeah, I wanted to get some stuff done before.
I get you. But what I want to ask, when you were 62 and you retired from WNEP, I mean, Medicare is still 2-3 years away at that point. Yeah. Were you thinking, oh, you'll do a little volunteering, but for the most part, you're going to take it easy. You're going to maybe travel. Did you know this next chapter would be kicking in where you'd be working full time again? And now
we budgeted, my wife and I, to be able to take care of the health insurance. And we guessed
until you get to Medicare.
There was no Medicare for us at the time. We budgeted. We figured it would be about $12,000 to $15,000 a year for right. the health care for the three of us, my daughter and my wife. It just literally a month and a half after I retired, I had some health problems where I had to have part of my intestine removed, and it was two different surgeries.
It was a challenge. More costly than you thought?
With the insurance that I had, the out-of-pocket expenses were between $8,000 and $10,000 for the out-of-pocket. But still, it was scary for a little while, and it made me want to do the public service work even more while I could.
Did you have to get back into being employed because of that partially?
No, we were still okay.
Okay, you're still okay.
Yeah, but we were still okay. Yeah.
So did you know the Marty Flynn thing? How did that happen?
Well, that's at that time Marty was running for office. At that time, it was.
You were buddies?
2012. Not really. He's a distant cousin. Okay. I knew him certainly, and it was more of some of the people who were working on his campaign knew me, and they came to me and asked if I would work for him. And I said, absolutely not. I'm not going to work for a politician. I just want to do what I'm doing and not work for anyone. Just I don't need to say a politician, but I just don't want to work for anyone. Right. I want to be my person and do what I want to do and not be told what to do. And they kept talking to me and. Eventually, they kind of positioned it that I can continue to do the public service work that I'm doing and get paid for it. And we originally we kind of agreed that I do it part time, maybe 20 hours or so a week.
All right.
And we'll see how it worked out. If it worked out good, if it didn't, that's okay too. I saw the light in that, and I could do public service work, but do it as a representative of a state representative. And perhaps be able to do more because I'd have that influence. And it worked out.
Yeah, with that avenue, you can amplify and magnify your efforts to a greater cause.
Absolutely. And I became, I hate titles, but I became chief of staff. And it was a lot easier for me to call or write to somebody with a signature on my letterhead of chief of staff, state representative Marty Flynn, and got people's attention, was able to do a lot more because of that versus Tom Welby from Scranton. It's like nobody will pick up the phone. But it was terrific. And I got paid for it. Not as much as I did in working in advertising.
But was this your first elbow into politics? You never did anything like that, did you?
I volunteered for people in the past and worked on campaigns of people that I believed in the past. So I always volunteer for people that I believed in. And it was a friend of my wife when she worked at Scranton State General Hospital would ask her, Kathy, who is Tom supporting this year? And she'd tell me, she says, oh, I just want to know who not to vote for. But I always believed in the idealist and still do and still have some of that within me today, as you do and most of us do.
When you were with Marty, how long was this going on? And when you're 2-3 years in, did you think, oh, I love this. I can do this until who knows when?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the case. I said, you know, this is good. And it's terrific when, you know, you have somebody that's trying to get something done, particularly through the state, and nobody's calling them back. And we're able to get something done that didn't always work out. There's a lot of people that we weren't able to help, but it's pretty good when you restore someone's faith in the system and help them out. And Marty, because of Marty's philosophy, it was a little different than just handling state issues. If somebody called and said that my neighbor's parking in my parking spot, or they're not cutting their grass next door, they're too loud, whatever, right, instead of giving them the number of the zoning department or whatever in the city, he would remind us, all of us on the staff, help them, take care of them, go down and take pictures.
Like personally, you'd have to go out and do that. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So we did. And we'd call the different departments that were relative or do whatever it took and helped a lot of people outside of state business just to make people happy. Let people know that people do care and people do want to help, can't always be successful. There's some people have a hard time accepting that because some things you can't fix. But we try. And that's great.
When was that first moment? How long ago? And what did you feel inside when you thought or asked to be, or how it evolved to be, I'm going to be the potential successor temporarily, or whatever you want to call this stage. Now, when did that happen?
And that happened by accident. It wasn't something that I wanted.
Right.
To
do. Did you ever see that happening or no?
Not really. No. I like being in the back because part of it is you can walk away.
Yeah. And how long ago was that?
It was around July of this past year. Marty was sworn in June as senator, and the seat became vacant. But before that,
he must have shared with you his plans.
Right. Did he say, I want you to do this or no? No, he never pushed anything and just honored whatever I was going to be doing. Let me decide.
And did you have to think about it, or you just thought definitely?
Yeah, I did think about it. I talked with my wife about it, and we thought it would be good. I could be the one that will make some decisions and choose the direction and path. And a lot of it is staying right in line with what Marty was doing, particularly with the constituent service, trying to help people out wherever we can, whenever we can.
And folks, he's sincere too. He's sincere. Trust me. I can see.
Yeah. The things that I want to see done are pretty much the same things that everybody's been saying for 20 years. We want to end that corporate loophole that's going on. We want to improve the funding for our school districts. And as a volunteer, I've been doing that since the 90s, going down to Harrisburg with some friends of mine from Stanford Children and Good Schools, Pennsylvania. We'd be down and knock on doors in Harrisburg. And now I'm going to be doing it as a state rep. I hope that we can achieve some of these things. There's such a poison that exists in Harrisburg and Washington and in capitals all around the country, where one side won't work with the other. And my pitch to people in asking them to support me in my drive to be the state rep is that I have no problem crossing the aisle and working with other people. But if other people don't do the same, I mean, I'm on an island. I can't get anything done. And it seems that to such an extreme degree, one side, it doesn't matter what the position is. It's like, oh, no, we're only going to vote Democrat or we're only going to vote Republican. That's crazy. And when I was down there being sworn in, I had people coming up to me that knew of my philosophies and my, so to speak, platform from the Republican side. They came up, shook my hand, said they wanted to work with me. And they did some reading about me and they hoped to be able to work with me. And there's Democrats. I know that both sides of the aisle in Harrisburg anyway, people do want to break through this stupid logjam of this poisonous partisanship that's there. I think it's going to happen. I hear you, dude.
I don't want to talk politics at all, but I will say, I will say this. You're right. Show me a bad marriage. Show me a bad boss employee relationship. Show me a bad friendship. And it's always because there's one person that doesn't give and take. It's always the case. And that applies to politics,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Business is the same way. Yeah.
I have some friends that have bad marriages. I have some friends that have bad jobs, and it's always the same case. Someone is just too rigid. You got to give and take in this world.
Amen.
And yep, that says it all. So yeah, when you were down in the initial stages of getting sworn in and everything, were you ever entrenched in that world? Because I'm wondering if you were surprised or what it was like, or what it was like to be thrown in to Harrisburg. Now you're this big shot. Like what's the feeling there?
I don't know. It's still kind of surreal for me.
Yeah.
I know I'm not, one of the old school politicians and maybe I'm misreading a lot of them too. Maybe they're not either. Maybe I just didn't feel comfortable initially going down there and not being part of the clique.
Oh, but, were you welcomed or was there like a wall?
Oh, yeah. Actually, for so many, it was welcoming. And those that I've interacted with so far have been terrific and do want to work together and are some really good people. We'll find out.
You know, so you feel good about it so far?
I'm sorry?
You feel good about it so far?
Yeah, absolutely. And as of today, when we're sitting here recording this, I'm only in there 2 weeks, and I was only down there in Harrisburg itself for 4 days so far. So I have a long way to go.
Tom, as you may know, right now, yeah, we'll see. As you may know, I'm a man of science. I have no interest and never delved into politics. I have the basic education in it, but I'm not attracted to it at all. I have no interest. I don't read about it. I'm glad it exists, but I don't want to be a part of it. The reason I say that is there may be other people like me, and I'm fairly good, well-educated. I'm not even sure of the role of a state representative. Could you give me that quick 30-second dissertation?
Oh, wouldn't be 30 seconds, that's for sure. But yeah, our multiple local and Harrisburg, the legislative part of it. The legislative part of it is trying to find those bills, those laws to adjust or put into effect. And some of it is looking around us at different states, what they have done successfully, and copying that. The simple things about providing for the services that we need and paying for those services, trying to find ways to do that, whether it be our roads and bridges, our education system, so many different things that we depend on for our state, federal, and local governments. So working on that and trying to satisfy those things without overburdening any particular area of us, but also making sure that everybody's paying their fair share. There's a lot of things that that aren't right, aren't fair. You have some,
but
I have some pet peeves.
I don't want to get it. I'm just wondering, is that like 9 to 5? Do you go? Are you expected to be somewhere 8 hours a day, or it's not like that?
Not like that.
You can go shopping all day today. No one will know.
Came up during our orientation last week that our staff, we have to be sure that our staff is doing their job, and I'm responsible to see that our staff is doing their job all the time. And that if our hours are from 9 to 5, then we work 9 to 5. And I'm lucky. I have a staff that has joined me, some of them from Marty's office, Angela and Joe Triano, Angela Rempe Jones, who was here before, and Joe Triano, who will work 20 hours a day if that's what it takes to get the job done. Regarding the reps, somebody asked a question when I was down there. They said, well, that's true. And we have to write reviews of them and keep everybody informed in Harrisburg as to the progress of the employees. And it was asked, well, what about the state reps? Who are they responsible to? And the answer was simple. They said, well, their boss is the people, and they can get fired. They can get fired every 2 years. But not until then.
Oh,
they said if the rep or the senator wants to work an hour a week, well then that's what the rep or the senator will work. But they have to keep in mind that judgment day does come with the people.
I didn't realize that. You can go to the casino every day for 10 hours if you wanted to, but sooner or later the reputation would be out there.
Absolutely. And so the other part of the legislative and trying to provide for services for people is incredibly important, to do it fairly and to be sure that everybody does their share. And that includes nonprofits, and it includes corporations, includes individuals. The other part of it is doing things for people locally, however we can, helping them through some of the red tape that they're facing. And through the pandemic, we had a lot of it where people couldn't get in to get their license renewed or whatever it might be, and helping them with that, with licenses for nurses or whatever it is. So helping people get through that red tape, and then continuing with what Marty was doing, and that is helping people locally if their garbage isn't being picked up, to find out why and help them with that. So that's what I look forward to, the human part of it.
Doing what you've always been doing, supporting people in need. I love that. So come next November, you're out of there. Or how does this work now? Does this you have to be elected when?
Yeah, and the spring is the primary, and part of the thing about the committee that chose me, and my feeling is, the rules are when someone in the House or Senate leaves, The Democrats pick one person that they can have as the candidate to run in a special election, and the Republicans can pick only one person to run in the special election.
Right.
And they're chosen by a backroom of people, not the people. And that's just the way the rules are, and hopefully we can change that.
Yeah, but if you do a great job and everyone loves you and everyone feels that you were successful, that's going to be you.
Yeah, but the problem that I have and the committee had in choosing me is we want the people to think that they are the one that are going to choose the state representative. Even though I was selected in the November election, there wasn't a contest to pick that one person who's going to represent the party, either party.
It does seem odd. But it's an emergency situation, so there has to be.
Right, it is, but they should arrange for the chief of staff or someone to be appointed to fill that seat in the meantime. For the 6 months, no one represented the 113th district. No one. And I try to do things, but they make clear to you, you're not the state representative.
Yeah, that is. You can fix that, sir.
Yeah, but I did say that in the primary, I won't run. We're going to have an open primary. We're not going to have somebody with a fake 3-month incumbency. I don't mean to say fake 3-month incumbency. I'm going to be working. We're not going to have we're going to have a totally open primary where Joe Blow can come out and run for this seat in the Democratic and Republican primary. And hopefully we'll come up with a good person.
I love it. All right. Well, it sounds like you got a great attitude. No more political talk. Is Angela still there? I have a question for her.
Angela.
And come on, I gotta ask you something.
She's sleeping. She's taking her nap. It's 11 o'clock, isn't it? No, I shouldn't say that.
No, it's 11:37. She's past
her. Angela.
I was hoping to get Angela. Do you happen to have a $20? Oh, she's coming.
I'm just slicing the pie.
Angela,
we have three leftover Thanksgiving pies.
We're about to end the podcast. I just have two things to ask you. Number one, he really is a great guy. How are we going to convince the people what a solid dude he is?
How do we convince?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
How are we going to convince the people what a solid, good guy he is? And I'm not just saying this. I shoot the straight dope.
There is no convincing to do. People know this.
They know.
He's been around for a long time, Joe. What do you mean?
If he wasn't a good guy.
He has been such an advocate for the community for so, so long. The proof is in the pudding.
You're right.
And that's the best thing. That's the best thing about him is it wasn't his agenda for a long, long time.
Yep.
Right? With the DJing, did you talk about the jumpsuits, the zipper jumpsuits, or did we miss that? Oh, come on. White and denim zipper jumpsuits.
You should have been here the whole time. Is that why you kicked her out?
We all love her, but sometimes we don't know why.
No, he skipped over the jumpsuit talk. I love it.
Oh, see, yeah. Anyway, back though to what you're saying though about what a great guy he is. I've been blessed to be, it's basically about 9 years now working together. And I am telling you,
I know that. Yeah, I know
there is absolutely nobody better to service these constituents. And he's been doing this for the community for this long anyway. So
I know he has. He's getting sick of this talk.
Genuine.
Let's end with this. Do any of you have a $20 bill on?
I probably do.
All right. I want you to take a look at it. And I know our podcasters can't see this, but they can listen. Get out a 20 and put it up to the camera. And you tell me who that looks like on the 20.
Nope, don't have one.
Oh, no 20. No 20.
Who does it look like?
That's his twin, Andrew Jackson.
You think?
When he had longer hair. When he had longer hair.
I think we should get Ange to run for this. Ange to run for this seat.
Ange, why don't you have a $20 bill on you? That's what I need to know.
Well, I probably do in my purse. You really want me to go look?
I think it's worth just 2 more minutes of podcast. Yes.
Why? It looks like Representative Welby or something.
Yeah, like him.
Maybe Joe does.
Andrew Jackson is on the 113th Lackawanna state representative list. You're going to see this any minute. So, Tom, thanks for coming in. Thanks for your time. While she gets the 20, I want to wish you well. And if you ever need an update and you want to utilize this podcast,
my mom stopped by for a visit and
has a $20 bill. Ange, I want you to be honest. Do you think there's a similarity there? You don't
see it. No. I think he looks more like me than him.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'm sure you have so much to do in the 113, so I'll let you go. And
we're going for lunch.
Go for lunch. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then down to the casino. And just before you leave, though, I got to hear, what color was this jumpsuit, Ange? Was it?
I told you there was white and denim.
And then the burnt orange one.
Oh, and a burnt orange. That'd be good for the fall.
And it was like all one piece?
One piece with a zipper. I've never seen them.
The denim one was all buttons.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. The denim one, all buttons. That's, yeah.
And how old were you at the time, Tom, when this was being sported?
I don't know.
I hope under 30.
Maybe, but I've never had a leisure suit, if that helps.
He also doesn't have running pants. That's why he can't run, because he can't find his running pants. Can I tell him we joined the Barrier Breakers?
Well, there's always the ones that they do have. They're not right.
We joined the Barrier Breakers. Can I tell this story?
I guess.
We joined the Barrier Breakers together. You know the Barrier Breakers,
the
right?
Couch to 5K.
Couch to 5K. So we went to the first meeting. It was fantastic. We went to the second, where you're going to start like doing what you need to do. And then all of a sudden I didn't see Tom anymore.
I made it to the third one.
Well, and then I said, why aren't you we committed to do this together. Why aren't you going? And he said, I can't find my running slacks.
The proper running slacks.
And the guy's 72. We'll let him go with that. Okay.
I guess.
That's what I could do. I could design good running slacks.
Good running slacks. Yeah.
You'll be the fastest guy at the retirement home. All right. Thanks, you guys, for your time. And
thank you, Joseph. You're great.
Bye.
Peace, love, and 113. Woo!
Curiosity. What are you so curious about? Everything. Mr. Curiosity.